The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. A special feature from Vermont Business for Social Responsibility, underwritten in part by CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy transformation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. By Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg. Proud to support nonprofit groups such as Local Motion, Vermont's statewide nonprofit advocate for walkable and bikeable communities. Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development, as well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Today we're going to cover a diverse range of topics. In our first half hour, we're going to be talking about Vermont Yankee and a new film about it. And in our second half hour, we'll be talking about the secret to creating companies where people actually want to work. So let's turn first to Vermont Yankee. Vermont Yankee was a nuclear power plant operated from 1972 until December 29, 2014, when its owner, Entergy, shut down the plant. In 2008, the plant provided about a third of Vermont's electricity consumption. This Sunday, October 29th, the Vermont International Film Festival will present the Vermont premiere of Power Struggle, a new feature-length documentary about the political battle to close Vermont Yankee. And that'll be at 3:30 at the Film House in Main Street Landing. Well, here to talk about the film, and they also are featured in the film, our filmmaker Robbie Leptzer. He's an award-winning independent documentary filmmaker and radio producer based in Wendell, Massachusetts, who's directed over 30 documentaries over the past four decades. We'll also be joined by Arnie Gunderson, who has more than 40 years of nuclear power engineering experience. He managed and coordinated projects at 70 nuclear power plants in the U.S., and he continues to consult on nuclear power issues for the Sierra Club, the state of Vermont. He was chair of a public oversight committee and an expert witness for the New England Coalition on Vermont Yankee. He was an original nuclear engineer for Vermont Yankee. And finally, we're joined by Maggie Gunderson. Maggie founded Fairwinds Energy Education in 2008. Its mission is to educate the public about nuclear power production, engineering, reliability, and safety. She also founded Fairwinds Associates, a paralegal and expert witness services firm, in 2003. So let's begin with Robbie Leptzer, the filmmaker whose film debuts this Sunday at the Vermont International Film Festival. Robbie, what led you to want to make a film about Vermont Yankee?
Well, first of all, David, thank you very much for having me on. Well, I live 18 miles from Vermont Yankee. And personally speaking, if there were to be a release, a major release of radioactivity from the reactor when it was operating, or now and into the future from the storage containers holding the high-level nuclear waste, my community in Western Massachusetts would be significantly affected. As a filmmaker, when I heard that Vermont was in the very unique position of being the only state in the country whose legislature was empowered to make a decision about the future operation of a nuclear power plant, I saw that this would make an ideal subject for a documentary.
Explain that peculiar legal caveat, that the legislature here had that power.
Well, it has to do with the fact that Vermont regulates and requires a state license for a nuclear power plant, as it requires, and then that's euphemistically called the Certificate of Public Good that they actually require for all energy projects. So the nuclear plant needing the permission from the state legislature for its license, that was going to expire in March of 2012.
And that exists nowhere else. States don't have that input into nuclear power.
Well, Arnie and Maggie can speak more to that issue, actually. And it's my understanding that the states have the authority to regulate non-safety matters, but they actually rarely use that authority.
How did you meet the Gundersons?
Well, you know, in my filming, you know, I thought that the idea of chronicling a process where citizens were wanting to have a voice in decisions that affect their lives. So, you know, how was that going to play out in terms of the state legislature, the power company? How were they going to respond? How was the federal government going to respond? So I began doing a great amount of filming in the Vermont legislature, in fact, and that's where I met Arnie and Maggie Gunderson when they were actually testifying at a hearing that was being chaired by now former Representative Tony Klein, who will also be speaking at the panel on Sunday after the film. And what I want to say is that I was immediately very moved personally by hearing Arnie and Maggie Gunderson speak, because they have been speaking, they've had the courage to speak truth to power for decades under enormous pressure from the nuclear industry trying to silence them. And, well, and so I, when I met them immediately, I knew that they would be major people in my film.
Let's turn to Arnie Gunderson. Arnie, what led you to go from being a nuclear engineer to being a nuclear critic?
Well, it's not a decision you really make. It's one that sort of happens. In 1990, so we're talking about 27 years ago, I was a senior vice president in the nuclear industry and found some violations at the company that I was working for, told the president of the company about them, and he fired me. And then I contacted the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they buried me. They buried the comments deliberately. Then Maggie was a reporter, and it was very important, helpful. We were able to get some congressional interest, and Senator John Glenn had congressional hearings where suddenly it was discovered that everything I said was right and that the NRC tried to cover it up. This weaves right into Robbie's film, because in 2010, the person that was in charge of the tritium leak at Vermont Yankee was the same guy who in 1990 tried to bury me. And we had the Inspector General's report that called him out. And on film, it didn't make Robbie's film, but it's one of these hundreds of hours of great footage. He tells Maggie that if he had it to do it again, he'd do the same thing, which really speaks to the emphasis on this industry about keeping nuclear plants running as opposed to public health and safety.
Maggie Gunderson, I wonder if you could say what you feel was the turning point that led to the closure of Vermont Yankee in 2014.
I think economics was the factor that led to the closure. We had been predicting that, Arnie and I had been predicting that for several years, that the plant was not economically viable anymore for Entergy. Not because it wasn't making money, it was making money, but they had originally, when they had the uprate, which means increase the amount of power from the same plant without changing any of its safety parameters. When they uprated Vermont Yankee, We had found in some of their papers that they were making $1 million a day in profit, extra profit, from the upright. So they were making plenty of money, but Entergy has always been a corporation that takes the money from any of its plants to the home office and doesn't reinvest in the plants.
Governor Shumlin campaigned in 2010 in his first run for governor. On closing, Vermont Yankee, what effect would you say Governor Shumlin had on the ultimate closure of the plant, Maggie?
I would think I think that he had effect not so much as governor, but in his role as president pro tem at the Senate. And I think that the people of Vermont and the legislature itself had the real impact.
Robbie Lebser, talk about the movement, the citizen movement, to close Yankee. How did that play into all this, and what impact do you think it had?
I think the grassroots movement had a huge role to play. Grassroots groups have been working to try to close Vermont Yankee since the plant first went into operation in 1972. In my film, I was not able to really cover the whole history of that. I was really only able to cover the 5 years that I was filming, really starting around 2010, when it really reached a fever pitch, especially leading up to the Senate vote in February of 2010, in which Peter Shumlin, who was the president of the Senate at the time, really led the charge. But that was preceded by years and years and years of citizen activism and petition writing and contacting the legislators. And because Vermont has a citizen legislature, and as an outside observer to Vermont, I spent a lot of time in the legislature and was thoroughly impressed that, at least in terms of my view, the grassroots democracy is alive and well in Vermont, and the Vermont representatives really listen to their constituents. And so it was because the activists really expressed their voices very loud and strong, and it was heard by the state, by the elected officials. It really, while economics certainly played a major factor, it was the economics under the scrutiny of an aware public and elected officials who were listening to that public that really pushed them over the edge.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking in this half hour about a new film called Power Struggle, about the movement to close Vermont Yankee. And the film will premiere this Sunday, October 29th at 3:30 in Burlington at the Vermont International Film Festival. And my guests are Robbie Lebser, the filmmaker, and Arnie Gunderson, a nuclear engineer, and Maggie Gunderson, who leads the organization Fairwinds Associates. Arnie, you have traveled to Fukushima. You've seen the nuclear life cycle all the way through, including where it collapses. Tell us about what Fukushima looks like today in Japan. And this is the three nuclear plants that were, you describe what happened there.
Well, there's four nuclear plants identical to Vermont Yankee in Fukushima that during an earthquake and a tsunami lost power, and their cooling systems were flooded with salt water, and the plants melted down and exploded. And I've been there four times now, and imagine an area from Middlebury, Vermont, all the way up to St. Johnsbury and inland to Montpelier. That's totally contaminated with radiation. You know, you've got farmers that can't milk their cows. As a matter of fact, the cows are being slaughtered because there's no market for the meat, nor is there a market for the cows. You know, and the streets are loaded. I was in a schoolyard that the radiation was 70 times higher than it is here in Burlington, and the Japanese government was still letting kids play in the schoolyard. Everywhere you go is contaminated, and yet the government is focusing on the 2020 Olympics as opposed to cleaning up a huge swath of land.
Is this the first time you've seen kind of a post-nuclear accident landscape? And, I mean, you've been warning about the risks of nuclear power, but is this your first time actually seeing it?
You know, I've been at, there was a nuclear meltdown in the UK, and there was one outside of Los Angeles, and both of those were in the 50s. And but I never saw the impact on people until I saw Fukushima. You know, the women are taking their kids and leaving, and their husbands are staying behind because they believe the government. And there's things called the Fukushima divorce now, which is the husbands and the family of the women are suing to get the children to come back to Fukushima. It's gut-wrenching to see the distortions in society. You know, Gorbachev said that in Chernobyl, it was Chernobyl that caused the collapse of the Soviet Union. And Nato Khan said the same thing. The former Prime Minister of the UK said something. Of Japan, said essentially the same thing about Fukushima. That this is a technology that can destroy the fabric of society overnight, and that's the only technology that can do that.
Arnie, as a nuclear engineer who turned on the nuclear industry, I know that you have paid a price as a whistleblower. What has happened to you?
Well, Maggie and I were sued for $1.5 million. We were driven into bankruptcy and foreclosure. We became teachers at a boarding school.
Sued by who?
Because that environment allowed us a place to live as well as a place to work. And from there we turned our life around. You know, now we consult for Friends of the Earth and the Sierra Club and on about nuclear issues. There's very few nuclear experts representing the public. You know, during the hearings that John Glenn had, a very famous nuclear attorney said to me, "Arnie, in this business, you're either for us or against us, and you just crossed the line."
Maggie, you want to add something to that about the price you and Arnie have paid?
Well, it hasn't stopped. Here in Vermont, Entergy went after us during the time that Robbie was filming and claimed we were lying and that we were trying to destroy their reputation because they didn't have any buried and underground pipes. And then, whoops, there was the tritium leak. And they had to admit that they had lied to the state and had pipes and knew it. So that was, and it's happening again now. Arnie is an expert witness for New England Coalition, as is Ray Shattis, also for New England Coalition. And both are experts who have testified numerous times before the Vermont Public Service Board, now called the Public Utility Commission. And both of them have been attacked by Entergy in a formal motion before the board to have them disqualified as experts. Arnie has testified worldwide, and so has Ray Shattis. I mean, it's just an appalling abuse of money that just goes on and on.
Let's talk about where we are today. Robbie, bring us up to speed. What is at Vermont Yankee at the location now? And I imagine Arnie and Maggie can also fill in some of those details as well.
Well, you know, my film Power Struggle ends with kind of a double ending. On the one hand, the film really recognizes the impact of grassroots activism, and we don't have many of those victories on a grassroots level to turn to today. So the grassroots activists had a major impact in shutting down the operation of this nuclear power plant here in Vermont. However, on the very same time, the reality is that the high level radioactive nuclear waste is going to remain at the Vermont Yankee site on the banks of the Connecticut River indefinitely into the future.
Arnie, what risk does that pose?
Well, there's probably about 1,000, the equivalent of 1,000 nuclear bombs worth of cesium that will be sitting on the banks of the Connecticut River for decades. And my biggest fear is terrorism. You know, these things are not immune to a terrorist attack, and they are rather fragile. And yet, we place them right on the banks of the most significant waterway in New England. It's a grave concern, and it's not going to go away until the casts are finally moved to an ultimate repository.
And what about the act of decommissioning, essentially deconstructing this plant? What hazards does that pose for residents?
You know, Entergy is proposing through the person they're going to sell it to, a company called Northstar, to rubbleize the concrete, which is basically they're going to grind it up and take the radioactive concrete and blend it in with the non-radioactive concrete and then leave it on the site. So it's like Yogi Berra's comment about, you know, it ain't over till it's over. And unless that material gets moved off-site to a permanent waste repository, you know, we risk contaminating the Connecticut River for 300 years.
Maggie, what do you feel the public needs to know about Vermont Yankee and the whole story that led to its closure?
That their commitment to the Vermont environmental movement, their commitment to a safe place to raise their children and to farm their lands is not finished. Because even though Vermont Yankee is shut down, it's still needs their activism. I like that Robbie's film is really democracy in action. And just like across the country right now, we have to be active and we have to speak out. That's even more true here in Vermont, because that legacy, that environmental legacy that will be left there, will mean that radioactive dust from rubblization will migrate into people's lungs, into their food through the uptake in the ground, into plants and vegetation. It will migrate in plumes in the weather, and it'll migrate in the groundwater and into the nearby aquifer and the Connecticut River. I think that it's a time to step forward even more.
Well, Robbie Lebser, where can people see your film in the coming weeks?
Well, the film is having its Vermont premiere at the Vermont International Film Festival. You can go to the website VTIFF for Vermont International Film Festival.org for a schedule. It is showing at 3:30 at the film house at the
Main Street Landing.
Main Street Landing. And then from there, this will be the kickoff for a Vermont film tour that I will be conducting throughout the winter and into the spring, maybe into the summer. I would very much like to bring Power Struggle to communities all around Vermont, because it's really a Vermont story. It's really a Vermont story of grassroots democracy in action, and it's a uniquely Vermont political drama as well. And so people can find out more about the film and contact me if they're interested in hosting a film in a community or a school or a library. You can go to the website for the film, which is powerstrugglemovie.com. Again, it's powerstrugglemovie.com.
Okay, well, that's going to do it for this part of our conversation. Arnie Gunderson, Maggie Gunderson, and Robbie Lebser, I want to thank you for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you for hosting us so much.
Okay.